Good evening, everyone, and welcome to tonight's EDF Action Telephone Town Hall. My name is L.G. Holstein. I'm Senior Director for Political Affairs here at EDF in Washington. I'll be moderating tonight's conversation. I'm delighted to have with us EDF President Fred Krupp and our special guest, Rhode Island Senator Sheldon Whitehouse. We'll be having a live interactive discussion on how we're going to organize in this new political era to protect and defend our nation's hard-won environmental laws and values. This work starts with our efforts to oppose the nomination of Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt to be the next administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency. Mr. Pruitt is a man who has built his career around attacking the very agency he has been nominated to lead. Simply put, he is the most dangerous EPA nominee in history. And I should note, he's the first nominee that EDF has ever opposed because he stands so far outside the bipartisan tradition of environmental protection. We need to stop Mr. Pruitt's nomination, and we need your help. At the end of this call, we'll offer you an opportunity to be patched through to your senator's office to help deliver our message opposing Mr. Pruitt. We're going to get started here in just a couple of minutes. Right now, what we're doing is dialing out to about 100,000 of your fellow members and activists, and this just takes a couple of minutes of additional time. So please stay on the line, and you'll be hearing from our speakers in just a couple of minutes. But I want to underscore that we want to hear from you. If you'd like to ask a question of our speakers, please press zero on your telephone keypad, and you'll be connected directly with one of our operators. We'll try to get to as many of you as possible. Again, press zero at any time to get in the queue to ask a question. So while the dialer is connecting with thousands of our members and activists, I'm going to give you two short poll questions for those of you already on the line. Are you ready? I'm going to put you to work. Here's the first question. Donald Trump will be sworn in as the 45th President of the United States on Friday. Now, when you think of what President Trump will mean for the environment, what word best describes your feelings? Press 1 if frightened is the word that comes to mind. Press 2 if discouraged best describes your feelings. Press 3 if you're fired up. Press 4 if you're feeling hopeful or optimistic. Again, 1 for frightened, 2 for discouraged, 3 for fired up, 4 for hopeful or optimistic. As a quick point of reference, in an online poll of our members that we took right after the election, half of you said you were frightened and another 35% said you were discouraged. So let's see if that number, those numbers have changed any. All right, the results are coming in. I'm looking at them now, and it looks like, well, 60% of you are frightened and 22% of you are discouraged. Well, no surprise. It's interesting. Regardless of how you answered, though, the point of this call is to discuss ways that we'll work together to fight any effort to roll back our nation's core environmental protections. For those of you who have just joined, I'm L.G. Holstein, Senior Director for Political Affairs at EDF, and I'm moderating tonight's town hall with EDF President Fred Krupp and our special guest, Rhode Island Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, both of whom will be joining us in just a moment. While the auto dialer is connecting with thousands of our members and activists, we're going to go to another question. This question deals with the Attorney General nominee. He's been served, as I noted a minute ago, or nominated to serve as the next head of the EPA, but he's built his career attacking that critically important agency that he now wants to run. Donald Trump promised to dismantle EPA, and Mr. Pruitt could be the man to do the job from the inside if he's confirmed. So here's the same question as before. When you think of the nomination of someone like Scott Pruitt to run EPA, what word best describes your feeling? Press 1 if frightened is the word that comes to mind. Press 2 if you're feeling discouraged. Press 3 if you're fired up. Press 4 if you're feeling hopeful or optimistic. Again, press 1 for frightened, 2 for discouraged, 3 for fired up, 4 for hopeful or optimistic. And let's see what our members and activists are saying. You folks say numbers coming in right about the same place. 60% of you frightened and another 25% of you are discouraged. Yes. Of course, we agree Scott Pruitt is the most dangerous EPA nominee in history. And he's the first EPA nominee that we have ever opposed. And the reason for that is simply that he's way outside the bipartisan tradition of environmental protections that we have fought so hard for so long. Throughout the call, we'll be taking your questions live. So once again, if you have a question or comment for Senator Whitehouse or Fred Krupp, please press zero on your phone at any time, and an EDF staff member will be happy to put you in the queue to go live on the air. We're going to be discussing some of the major political battles we'll be confronting in this new political era and what we can all do to protect and defend our nation's core environmental safeguards. With President-elect Trump's inauguration on Friday and Congress already back at work, the Senate confirmation hearings are already underway. This is a critical time to be discussing these important issues. With thousands of EDF members now on the line and more being patched through as we speak, we're going to do everything we can to get as many of your questions as time permits. So remember, press zero at any time to get your question into the queue. Finally, and this is important, tonight's call is more than just a telephone town hall. It's a live grassroots engagement event. What I mean by that is at the end of this call, we're going to offer all of you the opportunity to be directly patched through to one of your senator's offices. So we hope you all will stay on to deliver the message that you care about our core environmental protection, and specifically to urge your senators to oppose the confirmation of Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt to serve as the next administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency. You can also go to edfaction.org to join our Twitter brigade and to take action online. Again, you just go to edfaction.org. Let me turn now to welcome EDF's president, Fred Krupp, and to ask you, Fred, to say just a few words and to introduce our special guest. Fred?
Well, thank you, LG, and I'm pleased to welcome so many EDF members, EDF activists onto this call. We have thousands of members of also the Moms Clean Air Force joining us, and many representatives of other groups as well who have been invited and called in. So thank you all for spending some time with us tonight. And a real special thanks to Senator Whitehouse for joining us in this important discussion on the huge fights ahead of us in what is truly a new political era. I know that Senator Whitehouse is joining us live from the U.S. Capitol, where he's been participating in confirmation hearings. And I know the senator will be busy tomorrow in the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee with a confirmation hearing for for Scott Pruitt to serve as the next EPA administrator. Senator Whitehouse is on the all-important Environment and Public Works Committee that will be hearing testimony tomorrow on this. And I'd like to suggest that LG, that now we go to some questions, because I understand that Senator Whitehouse is not quite back at his desk.
Fred, I'm here and ready to roll with you.
All right, great, Senator Whitehouse. I hadn't gotten that word, but thank you for making time in what's such a busy time for you. I can't think of anyone who's been more outspoken, a champion of climate action and environmental protections than you. So please, give us your opening thoughts.
Sure. First, let me thank you, Fred, and thank EDF and everybody who's joined the call. Thank you to Moms Clean Air Force, which has a really wonderful group in Rhode Island. Tomorrow is a really big day, kind of a really big day in the history of the Senate. Because I can't recall in any nomination to any cabinet department an appointee who had more conflicts of interest than Scott Pruitt. His relationship with the fossil fuel industry and with other polluters seems to be one in which he does whatever they want, whenever they want it. And the idea that as EPA administrator, that's suddenly going to change requires more credulity than I have at my disposal. Saul had his epiphany on the road to Damascus, but I doubt Scott will have one here. The extent of his conflict is one piece of the puzzle, but the other piece of the puzzle that we need to focus on as environmentalists is that behind him, it's not just an industry with a conflict of interest. It's an industry that has manufactured a whole climate denial, science denial apparatus. Dozens of front groups, stables of phony scientists, and a very deliberate process of trying to get their message straight out to the public to create doubt where doubt is not due, and they're much more efficient at it than scientists are. Scientists go through peer review, which is slow and tedious. Scientists write for their colleagues, and if you've read a lot of scientific reports, you know it's not the sexiest stuff in town. And these guys go right out there with glib, special, cooked up answers that have been run through the Madison Avenue public relations folks that inform their work, and it's a really, really, really big operation. So it's not just that this guy has a conflict of interest, it's that he represents an apparatus, an operation that is one of the worst efforts at misleading the American public ever. It's probably the biggest propaganda effort that the United States has seen, certainly in my lifetime anyway. The last point that I'll make is that our process here in the Senate for advice and consent on a nominee like this is not up to date. The last time we had a presidential transition was when President Obama came into office. And that was 2 years prior to the Citizens United decision. Since the Citizens United decision, there has been an explosion of big money and dark money into politics, and that has dramatically affected the climate change debate. Before Citizens United, Republican senators were competing with their climate bills. There are probably five different Republican senators who had climate bills. Now, after Citizens United, you can't find a single Republican senator to write and push for a climate bill because the special interest power of the big lobbies was so augmented by Citizens United, they basically went from having muskets to having heavy artillery and drove our Republican colleagues basically back into their foxholes. It's a kill zone politically to cross them on this in the wake of Citizens United. So it's a big deal when there are relationships between somebody like Scott Pruitt and all of this dark money, and none of the long-time standards for disclosure reach it. This is the first election in which this has become an issue, and frankly, the executive offices of government ethics weren't prepared. So it's a big, big blind spot for us into which the Trump administration is basically saying, never mind, we don't have to tell you any of this. This isn't relevant. It's legal. Go away. So it's really important, I think, as an environmental community, first, that we stand up to Scott Pruitt because of his horrible conflicts of interest. Second, that we use this as an opportunity to look behind him at this whole climate denial apparatus and call it out as an operation, because if the press and the public don't see it, but they just see its results, then we're at a real disadvantage. And finally, I think it's worth bearing in mind, and we've got to keep focusing on the fact that we're not going to be able to do a complete evaluation of the conflicts of interest that Scott Pruitt presents while we are without the tools to look into what he's done with these dark money guys. If somebody gives him $1,000 and he's got a stake in it personally, then that has to be reported. If somebody gives his dark money group $1 million, I think that's pretty motivating and is something to be considered in evaluating conflicts of interest, and yet we don't see it. So you guys are great to put this pressure on, and I hope very much that we can work together to assure that EPA gets a more honorable administrator, and if we can't do that, that we absolutely positively keep his feet to the fire every moment that he's administrator and is serving the fossil fuel industry and other polluters and not serving the American public. Fred, thanks so much.
Thank you, Senator. I can't think of anyone who's been a more outspoken champion on climate action and environmental protection than you in the United States Senate, Senator. And I think by the latest count, you've taken to the Senate floor 149 times to deliver your stirring Time to Wake Up speeches urging the Senate to take action on the growing
climate. If they were all that stirring, Fred, I wouldn't have had to do it 150 times.
Nah. Well, you know, given the fights we have ahead of us, we need you. We need, you know, more. So I very much appreciate everything you've done.
Thanks.
Scott Pruitt, you know, to detail a little bit more, has taken 14 lawsuits against the EPA. On 13 of those 14 lawsuits, co-litigants have been involved, industry fighting EPA's protections. And in those 13 of those 14 times, he's accepted money either for his campaign or for an associated political cause or PAC. And he's
and we don't know what he's accepted in terms of money where it was a dark money operation. So that's a minimum.
Yes, that is a minimum. He's run a super PAC, as you know, Senator, Liberty 2.0, that's raised hundreds of thousands of dollars. And when that was exposed this week, they announced that the PAC would be shut down. But those longstanding connections with the very energy companies he'll be asked to oversee creates, as you said, just an unprecedented conflict of interest that are just unacceptable. But we don't have to speculate about this. We can just look at what he's done in Oklahoma. His first act as Oklahoma Attorney General was to eliminate the Environmental Protection Unit and shift those resources to a new federalism unit that was organized to challenge EPA's Clean Air Act protections. He's part of his efforts were to undermine our Clean Air and Climate Act. The report in the New York Times that was published Sunday, published a couple of years ago actually, found that Scott Pruitt sent letters drafted word for word by energy lobbyists, just copied them onto Oklahoma State stationery, forwarded them to EPA, the Interior Department, OMB, and even President Obama. When pressed to explain this practice, Mr. Pruitt just said, well, he was representing the interests of his, quote, constituents. He's taken the unusual step of filing joint lawsuits with industry players such as Oklahoma Gas and Electric, the coal-burning electric utility, and the Domestic Energy Producers Alliance, an oil and gas-sponsored group. His record doubting the overwhelming scientific consensus that climate change is real and humans are causing it is clear. He's falsely implied that there remains significant scientific disagreement while casting professional climate deniers as the real victims. Perhaps he should watch some of Senator Whitehouse's Senate floor speeches. Attorney General Pruitt's nomination will be brought up in the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee tomorrow, and as a member of that committee, the senator will have a critical voice, who has been such a critical voice in climate and clean energy enlightenment. We owe Senator Whitehouse a huge debt of thanks. As I wrote in the op-ed piece in the New York Daily News, every new president is entitled to assemble a management team of his or own choice. But the Pruitt choice is just so extreme, he's just the wrong person for the job. Donald Trump ran on a promise to dismantle the EPA, and in Scott Pruitt, he's nominated someone who's well-equipped to do it. So EDF's top priority is to oppose the Pruitt nomination. We know we can count on Senator Whitehouse and leaders like him to shine a bright light on Scott Pruitt's record, but we need to also rely on the broad grassroots support of our more than 1.5 million members and the members of other groups as well. There are going to be tough fights, but in the past we have found a way to make progress even in dark times, and at least to stave off some of the worst damage. You know, it's really important if the attempts go forward, as we expect they will, to gut our clean air and clean water and climate standards, that we have to fight back and make it politically painful. LG, I think we're ready for questions.
Okay, Fred, will do, and thank you for your remarks, and also thank you, Senator Whitehouse. We're about to open up the lines to questions from all of you who have called in on the phone. We have, let's see, over 15,000 people who have called in so far, so thanks very much for everyone who have joined us so far. And again, we're going to take as many of your questions as we can, so if you'd like to pose a question, all you have to do is press zero. The first question, Fred, we have is from George Neal of Virginia. Mr. Neal, go ahead.
Hi. I have two questions, one which is fairly short and the other which will take a little longer. There is also another teleconference call tonight taking place with Friends of the Earth, and I'm curious as to why two environmental organizations are competing with each other at the same time. The second question, the environment is facing a well-financed threat in the oil and gas industry. I feel it's vitally important that environmental groups unite and coalesce and work together to do some strategic planning to start meeting these threats before they get at our front door. We can't control what the Trump and his cronies will do, but we can control what we do. What is EDF doing to unite the thousands of environmental groups across the U.S.?
Thanks. That's a great question, and I don't look at it as though we're competing at all with the Friends of the Earth. I look at it as we're trying to reach as many people as we can and give them the opportunity to interact with us. So I want to reassure you that since the election day, I have been, on the phone and in the same room as the head of the Friends of the Earth. My colleague, this evening, just before this call, I was on the phone line with the head of NRDC, the head of Environment America, the head of the Sierra Club, Mike Brune. So we're in constant touch. The call we had earlier this evening from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time, had a steering committee of about 10 of the heads of the largest environmental groups. We are jointly raising money together. We have been for a couple of years on Clean Air Act issues, and our new effort will jointly raise money on all the issues that are under threat. So I just want to thank you for your question and reassure you that although we don't communicate about it maybe enough, we are very united, including all the groups you mentioned and many, many more.
Thank you, Mr. Neal, for your question, and Fred, for your answer. Let's go next to Roland Gove from Ohio. Mr. Gove, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Go right ahead, sir.
Well, I'd like to know, excuse my voice, I hear I'm just hopefully getting over a horrible three-week cold, but I would like to know what the outline is in hopefully there is one in effect for letting people know, be it any one of the I've been a member of the Sierra Club for many, many years, but I've also been a member of EDF and National Wildlife and Audubon, and the list goes on and on. But I'd like to know if there was some way of red lettering, highlighting, so to speak, different congressional acts that are on the table or will be on the table soon, so that people really have an idea. I think a lot of us who are fairly active are getting so many hundreds, literally hundreds of email that we tend to kind of gloss over a lot of them regarding different environmental issues. And I know this is a real big one.
Thank you very much. The You know, we've all collectively decided that the first thing we need to do is spotlight Mr. Pruitt's record to block his confirmation. If we aren't successful at blocking it, to have the maximum number of votes and put the press and the public, you know, not only on record with how much opposition there is to his conflicts, but also have senators that, if to the extent they do vote to confirm him, or individual senators cast a yes vote, that they know they're going to be accountable for what he does when he gets to the agency. I think it's a very fluid situation now, and we still have a chance to block him. It's hard because, you know, we need 51 votes to block him. But, you know, that's priority number one. Beyond that, we have put together materials on, you know, cataloging what the threats are. There's a whole series of threats under the Congressional Review Act, and I would, you know, invite you to, you know, be back in touch with us, and we will be able to send you and any other caller the information. Maybe, LG, you can suggest an email before we break that would be best for people to send in that request.
I sure will, Fred. I want to go next, and let me ask everyone on the line to, if you would, keep your questions short so we can get to as many of you as possible. We're going to go next to Helen Smith from Las Vegas. Helen?
Yes, good evening. My name is Helen Smith. I live in Las Vegas, Nevada, and I worked for 10 years with an environmental agency in California, so I know how important it is to keep our air and water clean. I want to know what you're going to do, or what commitments you're going to seek from Mr. Scott Pruitt, that he will not try to undo all of the laws that are in place and endanger the rest of us and our children and their children in the years to come.
Is that a question for me, or is that a question for Fred?
I think that's a question for you, Senator.
Well, Helen, unfortunately, I really can't think of an area of EPA jurisdiction where this person has any interest in doing the job that EPA was established to do. I do think that it's going to be very important to make sure that we can engage him and that the environmental community can engage him when he comes after things. The example that comes immediately to mind is that I'm sure he would like to try to undo President Obama's Clean Power Plan. And if we all stood by, then I'm sure that he would. But under the Supreme Court Massachusetts versus EPA decision, carbon dioxide is now, as a matter of U.S. law, a pollutant. And it's an air pollutant that is regulable under the Clean Air Act. And the finding has already been made, it'll be very hard to overturn, that it's dangerous, the endangerment finding. So when those two pieces line up, when it's a pollutant and there's an endangerment finding, then there's an obligation that courts will enforce for the EPA to go forward with a regulation. Now, he may not like this regulation, but it was worked on with most of the utility industry. It was worked on with the big electric grid operators. It was worked on with Republican and Democratic governors. And it's going to be hard to improve on. It's going to be hard for him to undo the endangerment finding because you can't really do that truthfully, and it's all subject to court review. He can't undo the fact that carbon dioxide is a pollutant. That's a Supreme Court decision, and he'll be under a legal obligation to have a rule. So a little bit like repeal and replace with Obamacare, they will be hard-pressed to repeal and replace, and they don't just get to repeal. And EDF lawyers and NRDC lawyers and LCB lawyers and everybody else, states, attorneys general, I think will be all over EPA, and they'll have to answer in the D.C. courts, the D.C. federal courts, pretty quickly if they try to undo it. So he's really, in some respects, quite boxed in. in other areas where it's just a question of non-enforcement or not going forward with a rule or burying things at the Office of Management and Budget, it's harder to chase him. But I think my focus anyway is going to be more on exposing his many conflicts of interest than trying to get him to agree to things that I have no confidence he'd honor, even if he said it in the hearing.
Thank you, Senator. Let's go next to Susie Hairston of Houston. Susie, go ahead with your question.
Hi. I actually have a question for Senator Whitehouse, and that is about your thoughts on the Regulatory Accountability Act and the RAINS Act, and it seems like you were kind of getting at, it seems like they could actually undermine what you were just talking about if justices are allowed to sort of comment on how regulations are getting enforced instead of deferring to the agency. So I'm interested in your answer to this.
Yeah, the rule of deferring to the executive administrative agencies who have expertise in an area is one that's going to be a little bit hard to undo. Even if you were to try to undo it as a matter of law, judges have, they don't have expertise in these areas themselves. And just the fact that they really don't know these areas is going to cause them, just in the nature of common sense, to defer to agency expertise, not because it is developed into a formal doctrine, but just because these are the people who actually do know what they're talking about, and as judges, they actually don't. So, yes, it can wound the doctrine of agency deference, but I don't think the doctrine falls very far before just the natural operation of human nature and the fact that judges truly don't have expertise in these areas catches it like a net. And with respect to other pieces of it, some of this stuff is Basic Administrative Procedures Act. You cannot lawfully enact a regulation that does not have a sound factual basis, that has been developed based on an adequate evidentiary record. You cannot make decisions that are arbitrary and capricious. So you have to start with real facts that have to withstand judicial review. You can't make them up the way they do in the press. You've actually got to have witnesses who can be cross-examined and can stand for all that stuff. And then once it's the factual predicate is laid, you then have to draw reasonable decisions based on that. And again, that has nothing to do with the deference to the agency. That's the very basics of due process in administrative agencies. So yeah, it'll hurt us to do that, but I don't think it's going to be as damaging as the Republicans behind it hope. A lot of them, I don't think, understand the process that they're in. They just think, oh, we'll get rid of that, and then everything's going to be great. Well, not so fast. But it is going to take environmental community fighting on all this stuff to make that work. If we're not there, then we'll get rolled over and they can do whatever they please. So it's really important to support the environmental organizations who will get in there and fight on this.
Thank you, Senator. Let's go next to David Maines from New York. Mr. Maines, are you with us?
Hi, this is David Maines from New York. Thank you all for the time, a comment and a question, Senator. Thank you first and foremost for your work and for your labor for our country. I wanted to let you know that about 2 months ago we held a summit in California with 160 investors representing over $1 trillion that care and are investing in climate and in the infrastructure, the green, clean infrastructure. So we are supportive of you and we back you. A question in regards to ITC and CPP and potentially CAFE, which of those do you think are at most danger with a Pruitt nomination?
I think the CAFE standards are probably in the greatest immediate danger because that was entered into as an agreement with the Obama administration. And with a new administration, they could simply adopt a new agreement. So it does have that vulnerability. On the other hand, if people start showing up in front of Ford and Chevy dealerships, politely holding up signs saying, please go to another dealer that isn't trying to ruin our planet by dodging responsibilities they've already accepted, I think that'll rocket its way through the dealer network and up into the companies pretty quickly. So, again, if we let this stuff happen, then a lot of bad things will happen. I think fairly small consumer and public actions could really, really make a big difference on these companies that care so much about public sentiment in marketing their products. And by the way, thank you for the work that the investment community is doing here. One of the dirty secrets that we have to live with in the Senate is that even the good guy corporations don't show up in Congress to lobby for doing something about climate change. They don't show up. They just don't. And that leaves the field to the bad guys, and it puts the Republicans in a terrible situation because they've got no friends in the world that they consider to be their friendly world. Nobody's going to stand up with them for climate. But I do think the investment community pushing on this is going to help move the corporate leaders to be a little bit more forward-leaning when it comes to supporting climate change regulation. They were great, the corporate leaders, on supporting the Paris Agreement, but collectively they do zero or less than zero to support climate legislation in Congress, and that needs to change if we're going to get something done. And your pressure will help make that change.
Thank you, Senator. Fred, we're going to come to bring a question to you in just a moment, but first, a question for the Senator from Peter DeFer in Richmond. Peter, are you with us?
Yeah, this is Peter DeFer in Richmond, Virginia. Hi, Fred. It's good
right
to hear
in.
You. For the Senator, I'm familiar with the way things work in the Senate, having done some lobbying up there. And so I'm interested in the most effective mechanism that ordinary citizens can use to help prevent the Scott Pruitt from taking the position of administrator, and including what message?
I think letting Republican senators know that this matters to you. In Virginia, that's not much help, I know, but all of us are members of professional organizations. We have family members. You know, I'd go through my address book and see who lives in a state represented by a Republican senator and see if you feel close enough to them to say, hey, you know, my senators are okay on this, but it really worries me about this guy, Scott Pruitt. Would you mind making a call or having your organization, a national organization, you know, encourage them to take a position on it? People need to hear that folks are really angry and worried about this. It can really work through the Republican Atlantic states. The effort to do offshore drilling in the Atlantic was pushed back on pretty hard by Oceana and other groups. And my recollection is that they went from Norfolk, Virginia, all the way down to St. Augustine, Florida, and got every single coastal community, even in all those red states, to come out with resolutions against offshore drilling. And where the local politicians wouldn't support it, they ran out the mayors or the county commissioners, and it was a pretty big political success. So we shouldn't write off these states. We should make sure that people are hearing from their constituents.
Thank you, Senator, and thank you, Peter. Fred, our next question is for you from Nancy Snyder, Butler, Ohio.
Snyder in Ohio. Thank you very much, Senator and Mr. Krupp. I do have a great Democratic Senator, Sherrod Brown. Here in
you
Ohio,
sure do.
Sure do, yep.
Senator Rob Portman. And Rob Portman is definitely has some dark money, I'm sure. my question is, how can we keep the black money out of politics in relative to keeping our clean air and our clean water and our clean energy for our children and grandchildren to help preserve their health in the future in the face of Mr. Pruitt's nomination?
Yeah. You have made a super important point. And The way I say it is Citizens United is the climate change problem, and the climate change problem is Citizens United. I came to the Senate in 2007, and there were McCain bills, Collins bills, Senator John Warner of Virginia bills, Republican, Lamar Alexander bills, Lindsey Graham bills. And then along came Citizens United, and it gave these big special interests so much heavy artillery that they've just squashed the Republican opposition. And that's enabled them to make this look like a partisan issue, and it really isn't. It's an old special interest issue. They've just nailed down the Republican Party on it. Unfortunately, one of the reasons that Rob Portman got elected is because his state got flooded with special interest money, a great deal of it, polluter money and fossil fuel money that went after your former governor. And so while I think Rob Portman has his heart somewhat in the right place on some of these environmental issues, and I think that in the right circumstances he might be reachable, he's got kind of an immediate debt, and certainly Mitch McConnell has an immediate debt to the fossil fuel guys who put, I don't know, $60 million into that election. It was a really big number. So we're going to have a continuing uphill struggle as long as these fossil fuel guys can put unlimited money into elections and hide it, both. And so fighting Citizens United needs to be a really core part of our strategy. And the good news is that both on climate change and on fixing Citizens United, we have huge, huge, huge public support, 70-80% public support. So it's a question of really being organized, really showing people we care about this, and keeping after those issues. Yeah, I mean, it's a dirty thing that is happening in Washington because of their money, and it's a shaming thing, really, for our democracy.
Thank you, Senator. Fred, I'm going to ask you to tackle the next one. It's from Bob Abatacola from Northport, New York. Bob, I hope I said your last name correctly. Are you with us?
Yes. Good evening. I have just basically a general question. There's been a lot of great things discussed here this evening, all very inspiring and some very intelligently put together suggestions for how to go forward. But how do we fight against a large part of the public and the politicians that simply dismiss intelligent conversation, climate change, scientific results, very dismissive of any or skeptical, and they cast doubt on the facts? It seems kind of difficult to go back and with facts to people and politicians with this kind of position.
My advice, Bob, is to make it local. A Republican in New Hampshire might not care very much about what the Sierra Club thinks about climate change. He may have sort of tuned that out. They certainly won't care very much what the UN thinks about it. But to the extent that we can build a state-by-state glossary of local stories so that in New Hampshire you know that the moose, their iconic mammal, is dying off because they can't keep the ticks off them because the snow that used to kill the ticks isn't there any longer. And there are horrible pictures of moose calves just covered in ticks. They look like they have blueberries growing all over them. It's really revolting. And that it's the purple finch is their state bird, and that the New Hampshire Audubon Society predicts that, you know, that bird will not be found in New Hampshire any longer. And every state has a state university, and every state university, whether it's Ole Miss or University of New Hampshire or URI in Rhode Island, University of Oklahoma even, has people who are teaching climate change. and it's really, really hard to turn on your own home state university. So we haven't done anywhere near as good a job as we should in the environmental community about making this a really, really local issue and getting the local fish and game folks, the local fishermen, the local moose watching businesses, whoever it is, wildfire fighters. There are people who the local community respects and knows, and their voices are the ones that need to lead this, not just international environmental experts who they've tuned out.
Yeah, I agree with that, Senator. And I want to just point out that the local stories angle is extremely powerful. So I completely concur with your answer. I guess bringing us back for a second to the urgent matter that, you know, in 13 or so hours, the senator will be in a hearing room with Scott Pruitt. I just want to emphasize for a moment, it's not even just climate. Mr. Pruitt has signed his name to a brief that takes mercury, something that comes out of every lump of coal when it's burned, and he has signed his name to a brief mercury, a substance that we know damages the development of children's brains. Mr. Pruitt signed his name to a brief that doubts there's evidence that mercury is a public health hazard. He has fought against rules on soot, on smog. All the suits he's taken are against EPA, no suits in support of regulations. If it was just climate change where we disagreed with him, that would be bad. This is even worse. We've never had a nominee in the history of EDF 50 years that we've opposed. And we oppose him because he's not just bad on one thing, he's bad on everything.
Probably got two more questions.
And my Republican friends in the Senate who are quietly looking for a little help on this could give them some cover to vote against this guy because they agree he's a menace, but they're sort of trapped, have said, look, Sheldon, you make this a referendum on climate change, and I can't help you because that's too fraught an issue. But on mercury, on why he went after the Humane Society, on these particulates that get in kids' lungs, on asthma, that's where, you know, you need to try to make your case. So I pass that on.
Thank you, Senator. And let's go next to John Hicks in St. Paul, Minnesota. John, are you with us?
Yes, I am, but my question has just been answered. And quickly, the question had to do with whether or not Scott Pruitt has ever gone on record taking a business or corporation to court in Oklahoma for violations of the Clean Air Act or the Clean Water Act. I assume he has not.
The thing that he takes some pride in and talks about all over town is a settlement that he entered into with respect to phosphorus that the poultry industry in the form of chicken manure was dumping into a river. And he entered into a multi-state agreement with the poultry industry with respect to cleaning up that river. What he does not tell you is that his predecessor had brought that case, had been very active in it. There were tens of dozens of pleadings filed in it. And when he came in, he basically stopped the case while the case was at the judgment level pending with the judge. And one could as easily make the case that his agreement with the poultry industry was a bailout of the poultry industry before the court could come down with a harsher remedy. So that's his best case. And it almost looks like he was trying to go in and clean up for the industry rather than actually enforce. And there's very little sense that he would have brought the case in the beginning, had he been in charge, to ever get himself into the position where there was a prospect of a judgment against the poultry folks.
That's why it is so important in just a few minutes when we give thousands of you on the phone the opportunity to be patched into your senator's office and to leave a message with your senator that a vote to confirm Scott Pruitt is unacceptable. I hope you'll stay on the line and leave that message. That can really help us. LG, do we have time for another question? Or?
Yes, I think we have time for one more, Fred. Let's go to Betty Luxmore in Kentucky. Betty, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Go right ahead.
Thank you so much for taking my call. My senators are Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul. My representative is Andy Barr. They're all Republicans. Have no voice. I'm originally from Eastern Kentucky, on a little piece of land through inheritance. Abandoned mine is sitting on that land, gushing out just probably poisons. My father had a garden below it for years and ate the crops out of it. It's not a question, it's just a plea to please remember the folks in Eastern Kentucky who think there is no option, who recently elected Republican governor, he ran on lessening the EPA rules and regulations on coal mining. So please, people that are on the line, be in prayer for the people in the Appalachians, especially in Eastern Kentucky, who have no jobs. Very little jobs unless you're in health care or you're in education. They feel just hopelessness. And I live in Winchester. I lived 18 years in Eastern Kentucky. And when I graduated from nursing school, I left that area. There was a coal tipple beside my parents' house. They were threatened that land was going to be taken at one time. And because they needed the land, and it was mineral right land. And until the clean air and water proclamation and rules came out, that closed that tipple down. People are living there, maybe not as healthy, but somewhat healthier because we don't have the coal dust. So all I'm asking,
Betty, let me just,
is,
oh yes, go right
please,
ahead.
Please,
I want
please,
to get
remember,
question.
Please remember that.
Thank you, Betty.
Will do. Senator, let me just. My comment back to Betty would be that I remember giving one of my climate speeches about Kentucky when Leader McConnell had done something that was provocative to me. And I went through Lexington, Bowling Green, and other Kentucky cities, all of whose mayors were participating in the mayor's climate pledge, and going through all of the universities, University of Kentucky, Kentucky State, Western Kentucky, Northern Kentucky, and even Mitch McConnell's alma mater, all of whom were teaching serious, real climate science. So you have a core in Kentucky, in your universities, and in your cities that you can begin to build on, and I encourage you to do that.
Thank you, Senator. And Betty, thank you for your question from Kentucky. We've come to the end of our discussion. We've had tens of thousands of EDF members and activists on the phone, which is incredible. So thanks to all of you for joining us. Please stay on the line, if you would, for a few minutes longer, and we'll be able to patch you through to one of your senator's offices so you can let he or she know that you care about the environment and that you oppose Scott Pruitt's nomination. Fred, I want to turn it over to you for any final thoughts, but let me note first that I understand you're going to be on Morning Joe discussing some of these issues on MSNBC tomorrow morning.
You know, the senator has been very gracious in talking about the role that environmental groups play, and I appreciate it, and we do play a role, and we do need folks' support and people to stay on the line and leave messages for the senators. But I just want to end the call by thanking you, Senator Whitehouse. You're going to be on the front lines. You get to cast a vote on this nomination. You get to talk to your colleagues. The fact that you are our champion on this and so many other issues you know, we have others, but none better than you. So I just want to thank you for joining the call, and thank you for...
Happy to do it, and thank you for your leadership on the Toxic Chemical Safety Bill. You, EDF was phenomenal in making that happen.
Thank you, Senator. All right, let's ask people to stay on the line, and please do leave a message with your senator. Just take a couple minutes more.
Thank you, Fred. And Senator Whitehouse, any final thoughts?
Mark your calendars, April 29th for the climate march.
Okay, sounds good. Well, I guess we'll end it right there, unless, Senator, you had any other thoughts you wanted to add?
Nope, just April 29th for the climate march in Washington. Come if you can.
Got it. Thank you so much. So now each of you still on the phone has the chance to help deliver our message directly to your senator. In a moment, I'm going to ask you to press 8 on your telephone keypad to be patched through to your senators. So you can reach a member of the senator's staff, or at this hour, you may reach a voicemail. Either way, here are the three messages that I'm going to give you kind of as hints for when you get through. One, you're a constituent and a resident of your state. Second, that you're opposed to Scott Pruitt to head the EPA because he has such a long record of protecting polluter interests, not the public interest. And three, that you support clean air and clean water standards and hope the senator will vote no on Mr. Pruitt's confirmation. Again, first say you're a constituent, then that you oppose the Pruitt nomination, and finally, that you support strong clean air and clean water standards and urge the senator to reject Scott Pruitt's nomination to head the EPA. So many of you patching through, you may get some busy signals, but never fear, you can go online to edfaction.org and deliver your message that way. Again, go online to edfaction.org if you aren't able to get through. But first, give it a try. Press the number 8 on your telephone keypad right now to be patched through. And that brings us to the end of our teletown hall. Thank you to all of you for joining us. Thank you, Fred. And thank you, Rhode Island Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, for joining us. Hope you all have a great evening.